I can't seem to cure.
This is Covenant Eyes Radio, helping you to stay pure online. Today we are playing the first part of our interview with Darren and April Mabry. 4 years into their marriage, April found pornography on Darren's computer. At the time, Darren was attending seminary and training to be a minister. April shares for us the pain of that first discovery and the cycle of sin and discovery that continued for years following that.
I was brokenhearted and didn't know what to do. That started, you know, a long 8-year process of finding it, confronting him saying he's sorry, going on. That same pattern just went over and over and over. Over those years, because I didn't share it with anybody, that disappointment turned into despair. He took me to the airport. I got out of the car and I said, I just want you to know I'm leaving. I'm leaving you and I'm not coming back.
Darren also shares his thoughts on what kept him so trapped in pornography and what will bring guys who are trapped in this to the breaking point.
It's because it's this cycle of narcissism that you fall into. And this narcissism drives guys to become the masters of their universe. And this is the easiest and the best way for most guys to feel and make life feel good.
Can you describe for us the first time that you found out about Darren's pornography problem?
We had been married about, I guess, around 4 years, and Darren was at seminary class, so he was working full-time and going to school in the evenings. So it was around 9:30 or so, and we had AOL dial-up, which was back in the day, and I signed on to send some emails or something, and just happened to, open up the browser and type something in. And when I did, it autofilled all of these websites. And as I read through them, I was shocked. I had no idea that was happening. I can't really tell you, I don't remember actually what happened between the next hour or so, but I know that I ended up at Darren's seminary, at Dallas Theological Seminary. I think I was in my pajamas. I drove about, I guess it was about a half an hour away. I was, obviously distraught and upset, and I stood at his class doorway. And I think he felt me from behind. He was facing away from me, and he turned around. And when he saw my face, I think that he just knew. And he came out, and I confronted him with it and asked him to tell me what was going on. And, of course, he denied it, and, but I had him dead to rights. I mean, it was apparent that all that had happened. And he apologized. It was emotional. I was brokenhearted and didn't know what to do. And that started, a long, probably 8-year process of finding it, confronting him saying he's sorry, going on. That same pattern just went over and over and over. But that's how I came to find it for the first time.
April, why don't you describe the story of the day that you left? What was going through your mind at that moment?
Because of the family that I came from, I come from a pretty abusive. My father was very abusive, and in many ways, he had a lot of his own addictions. And my mother, they stayed married for 32 years, and so I was so happy that I was married to, a guy that was a Christian and was in seminary and, was this great guy. And I enabled him for all those years, just like my mom enabled, and so you just do what you do what you know. But at the end of the day, it really boiled down to pride for me. I didn't want anyone to know that our marriage was flawed or that we had problems. And so basically, I held it in, and that disappointment that I had in the situation and in Darren over those years, because I didn't share it with anybody, because I held it in, because I protected it and kept it a secret, that disappointment turned into despair. And I started to really move away from God, from, you know, I still was a Christian, and I still was in church and still involved in Bible studies and all that, but I could feel my heart was just hardening overall. And I was almost going into protection mode, which is what you do when you come from an abusive home. And I think that I just, at one point, I think I walked in and I caught him one evening. And it just was like the littlest light that was left in me just totally went dark. And I started planning of how I was going to leave and, you know, didn't say anything, just planned it. And so, you know, I travel for a living with my job, and Darren normally would take me to the airport. And it was a normal day, and he knew that I caught him. He knew that I was upset, but, you know, he just kind of moved on like we always did. And he took me to the airport, and I got out of the car, and I said, I just want you to know I'm leaving. And he said, yeah, I know. And I go, no, I'm leaving you, and I'm not coming back. I wanted him to do something. I wasn't exactly sure what it was, but I was desperate for him to reach out and try to save something. And so he said, well, you know, what do you want me to do, is really what he said. What do you want me to do? And I said, I want you to get out of the car and come around here and, you know, grab onto me and say, I don't want you to leave. I don't want you to go. And he just said, well, whatever. He was so disconnected from reality that he couldn't even hear. He couldn't hear my cries at all. And I had allowed that to happen for so long. You know, you cry for a while and then he gets over it. So I had created a repetitive pattern, and we were dancing a dance, and it was just another version of the same dance. And so I left, and that, you know, that was it.
And Darren, now you looking back on this, as you were going back and forth between you were being caught and then apologizing and then justifying, going back into pornography again, and kind of this back and forth going on. And we talked to a lot of women who really wrestle with this question. What's it going to take for my husband to change? Like, what's the breaking point for him where he says, I've got to do something? What for you was the breaking point?
The breaking point for me was when April just left. And even then, I didn't believe that it was real. I was so disconnected from reality around me that even when she left, it took me weeks after that to kind of have that fog get cleared away enough that I started to realize this is real, and I wasn't just going to be able to kind of talk my way out of it again.
So I guess as you think back then on this addiction that you had to pornography, April here keeps saying that she enabled you, to do it, that she was, in a sense, an enabler in the situation. Describe for our listeners, I guess, there's sort of a mystery that or a question that a lot of women have about this, which is, why is it that when a wife knows there's this problem, confronts the problem, they even believe, well, maybe there's something wrong with me. You know, maybe he's turning to porn because there's something wrong with me. Maybe I'm not enough or whatever. And they will try to be attentive to their husband. They'll try to be responsive to their husband. They'll try to invest in the relationship as much as they can. What is it that keeps a man, or I guess speak it directly to you, what is it that kept you going back to porn again and again, despite the fact that your wife was very, you know, willing and eager to make the relationship work in spite of it?
Well, first I would say I would have never have classified myself as an addict. I would not have perceived that. I would probably have said, yeah, I probably have a fascination with sexuality, but you know, that's because I'm a guy. But at the end of the day, you know, I would never have said I was an addict. Why go back? It's because it's this cycle of narcissism that you fall into. It was my inability. It really had become the way that I had tried to maintain a level of emotion that I experienced and how I felt about life. It's just the way I had learned from the time I was 13. It was the best way I knew to make life feel good. And
right.
So it wasn't about dissatisfaction with my wife. I have an amazingly beautiful wife. It has nothing to do with that. And most women, I can see very clearly why they would think it's about them. And 99.9% of the time, it's not ultimately about them. And this narcissism drives guys to become the masters of their universe. And this is the easiest and the best way for most guys to feel and make life feel good. And that's why I kept going back. I did not see, I also believe the lie that this wasn't something that ultimately would take everything that I had. And like all sin, the subtleness of and the deception of what it can ultimately bring you, which is death, we don't believe that this is going to do it, and we don't believe it's going to happen to me. And it seems harmless, and it's you know, you're off doing it by yourself, and there's, you know, no harm, no foul, and we kind of fall into that. But we can't see how it is dragging us down in this hole. And you asked a very good question, Luke, and I did not answer your question, and I want to answer it.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I think there's basically two ways a guy is going to come out of this. This sin has such an enormous attachment and produces shame. It is maybe like no other sin for a Christian guy. This is an amazingly shameful thing. And shame is such a powerful emotion. There's probably only two ways that a guy's going to come out. Number one, he's going to get caught. And even then, he's probably, you know, shame is so powerful, he doesn't want to admit it.
Right.
And along with getting caught, that will produce so much pain in his life that the pain will outweigh what he's getting from pornography, and he'll start to try to find a way to climb out because the pain is intense, so intense. The other way is, I think we have to have an understanding that grace and the gospel, it has to outshine the shame. Unfortunately, we don't live in a Christian culture and in a culture where that outweighs it. And it's going to take a lot of preaching, a lot of teaching for a man to be convinced. I think the other way it'll happen is if they get to go second. If a man has to have safety, he's about to admit that he is flawed to the core of who he is. He doesn't just need, you know, an assist from a savior to get him into heaven now. He is flawed to his very being.
Yeah.
That is a very, very hard thing for a man to admit. And so until you can get them into a place where they understand that the grace in the gospel means that that's okay, and it takes a lot of work to create that culture and to convince a guy that it's okay. So unfortunately, what I'm saying is, for the women, there's only two things that are going to make this happen. There's going to be enough pain that he's willing to change, or that the culture around him and the community around him is it's so much part of their DNA of grace and the gospel of God. Those are about the only two ways I think a guy will come out.
You have been listening to the first part of our interview with Darren and April Mabry. Visit Darren's website, darrenmabry.com. In the next portion of our interview, Darren and April talk about how the gospel and gospel-centered community can bring a man out of hiding and help him to overcome sin that has ensnared him for so long. I am your host, Luke Gilkerson. Listen to more of our podcasts by visiting Covenant Eyes Radio on iTunes or visit the Covenant Eyes blog, Breaking Free, at covenanteyes.com/blog. I forgot.